Events are happening faster than ever.
Closing in fast.
The fast track.
Fast.
Keep up with your world on 55 KRC.
People need to stay informed.
The talk station.
The 55 KRC.
The talk station.
Happy Wednesday.
If I could put on a statewide mandate, we would do it. What the legislature has made very clear is that if we put on a statewide mandate, they will take it off. They have the ability to do that.
Yeah, welcome to representative democracy, Governor DeWine. That's Governor DeWine saying, I'd like to be a dictator, but I do appreciate the fact that we have a system of rules in place. You know, legislature creates the bills and approves them and sends them over to the governor to be signed into law. And keeps them in check that way. The separation of powers, fundamental concept of the United States of America, Governor DeWine, and I know it runs afoul of perhaps political expedience or what you personally want, but what you personally want may not be what your constituents want. Constituents, of course, elect the representative to, stand in their shoes on a representative basis. Anyhow, happy Wednesday to you. Brian Thomas right here. Glad to be. Hope you're having a good day so far. Give it some time and hang out here. Craig Kesey from SWORD is returning to the 55 KRC Morning Show. Going to talk about the Western Hills Viaduct. According to reporting in the Enquirer, caption, West Side Renaissance. SWORD will pay for new Western Hills Viaduct with sales tax money under plan proposed Tuesday. We'll see what the terms and conditions of that plan are. Craig at 7:05. Followed by Chairman Alex Trantafilo, head of the Hamilton County Republican Party. We all know that. We will be talking politics, his evaluation of the field of 35, I believe now, Cincinnati City Council candidates after the other two were approved the other day. So we've got that now that it's all set. We've got the mayoral race set in stone well with David Mann and Aftab Perlmutter. Vote, man. Township races, there's a lot of really big ones going on out there, and we'll learn about those from the chairman. And finally, his thoughts and comments on redistricting, which is a hot topic here in the state of Ohio. Dragonfly, great foundation, Dragonfly Foundation. We're doing a motorcycle run, going to be out at Fairfield, Queen City Harley-Davidson in Fairfield. That's taking place on Saturday. I will be there with my motorcycle. I'm going to do a little MC things. We're going to hear from the Dragonfly folks at 8:05, learn about the event. Hopefully you can make it. Hopefully the weather is going to be nice. Judge Andrew Napolitano with his column, Twilight's Last Gleaming. Fortunately, I get an early advance copy of the judge's column, and that is the name of the column. We'll talk with the judge about that at 8:30, as we typically do. Remember, if you can't hang out all morning, can't listen live, just head on over to the 55KRC webpage, my blog page, and check out the podcast. Dave Williams was on yesterday. Thanks for the picture of Emilio Estevez. That cracked me up. Apparently, Emilio, now the voice of the streetcar. Is that going to get anybody to ride it? I think the answer is clearly no, but I always end up with a comment or two from Dave on the streetcar every time we talk. Great illustrations of epic failure when it comes to government prioritization. Phone number here, if you'd like to call, comment, agree, or disagree with me, it doesn't matter. I'd love to hear from you. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, or hit #550 on AT&T phones. Yeah, Governor Newsom, he defeated the recall effort pretty substantially, too. 67.3% said no, 32.7% said yes. And, of course, in a state where the Democrats outnumber the Republicans by at least 2-1 margin, probably comes as not a big surprise to a whole lot of people. And here's one where the polling actually reflected. Actually, the polling, I believe, was not as good for Newsom, although it always had him winning or defeating the recall. I think the percentage by which he defeated the recall is higher than the polling was reflected, but the polling did reflect that Newsom was going to win or not get recalled. And Newsom said yesterday in his news conference, no is not the only thing that was expressed tonight. I want to focus on what we said yes to as a state. We said yes to science. We said yes to vaccines. We said yes to ending this pandemic. Is that really what people were voting on? In part, I suppose. He also had this to say. We defeated Donald Trump. Donald Trump didn't even stick his nose in this particular race. I think he was mum on it up until the last couple of days. And what did Donald Trump have to do with this race? Oh, that's right. It was the Republican standout that this race became about. Anyway, he went on to say, we defeated Trump. We didn't defeat Trumpism. He said, Trumpism is still alive all across this country. It's like a disease, it sounds like, doesn't it? They say and suggest the recall election, not exactly a perfect barometer, at least insofar as national trends are concerned. I did already point out that Republicans are outnumbered nearly 2-1 in California, so that doesn't necessarily translate to other races. And if you've been paying attention to other races, Republicans have been beating consistently the Democrats in these off-election year races that have gone on. So you got two questions in yesterday's vote. Newsom, should he be recalled? And if so, who should replace him? Now, there were 46 names on the list of replacement. That's almost like the number of council members or people running for council in Cincinnati. And it was Larry Elder. I'm sure you've heard of Larry Elder because of this race. He's a conservative talk show host, but he came out as the front runner. And that's why Newsom says this is about, you know, Trump be defeating Trump. Because Elder, while not Donald Trump, does have a more conservative political ideology. And therefore, they lump him into the Trump camp and immediately label him as Trump. And in fact, called Larry Elder black man, a white supremacist, among other things. Wow. So ultimately, this race was not really about do we hate Governor Newsom and think that he his draconian lockdowns and his dealing with the coronavirus was in and of itself a bad thing or a good thing. It was more about do we want Larry Elder running the state or do we want Governor Newsom? Stay with the one you got versus the one you don't. You know that old adage. And that is what a lot of political analysts and commentators and just observers like myself have concluded. Newsom pointed out, speaking specifically on issues, Elder opposed the increasing of minimum wage, which parenthetically has kind of gone by the wayside because there's such a shortage of workers out there. There is no longer this big push for minimum wage. People are already making more than $15 an hour, and no one's working in those jobs. Got a lot of statistics on that. Employment landscape is totally and colossally screwed up right now. Also, Elder is against abortion, and we all know everybody in California loves abortion. And the governor called him more extreme than Trump. Biden called him the closest thing to a Trump clone I've ever seen. You see how they always turn this into Trump? Simply by having an R after your name. It's Trump. But just... Does that mean, okay, what do we have a problem with about Donald Trump? Everybody I talked to, the only really outstanding problem with Trump they had was his Twitter feed and his way of just going off the on the fly. Policy-wise, take Trump's name out of it and look just at what Trump did from a policy perspective. All the successes that he had. He negotiated trade. He settled. He brought peace to the Middle East among a variety of countries, at least so far as the relationship with Israel. He got a handle on the border security. I mean, there were a lot of positive things that you don't turn into Trump because you believe in core fundamental conservative ideological principles. But welcome to the world we live in now. If you believe in conservative ideological principles, you are Trump. And they will label you as Trump. And that apparently is, I don't know, creates a Pavlovian response in the population. Like, Trump! He's a Trump clone! Does Larry Elder look like Trump? Does he talk like Trump? Does he act like Trump? The answer of all of the above is hell no. Does he share some of the political ideological points of Donald Trump? Yes. But then again, a hell of a lot of Americans do. 80 million or so at least cast a vote for him. And I would argue a lot of people who voted for Biden really didn't vote for Biden. They just voted against Trump because of the problem issues we had with Trump. He's a bad representative on the world stage. He's embarrassing. His Twitter feed doesn't make any sense. You know the reasons. And, of course, we even had this conversation yesterday. One of the callers, and it's like, this Biden guy, what's the deal? Remember, he didn't campaign. He was cast as the moderate bridge builder, reacher of across the metaphorical aisle. And then he hid in his basement. He wasn't pressured to really do anything. And none of the other Democratic candidates in the field registered, with the exception of Bernie Sanders. And we know the Democrats knew Bernie Sanders couldn't win an election. So Joe Biden was the default guy. He was the only other one that was getting double-digit numbers in the polling. And they still weren't that high. Trump. Anyway. That's the outcome, and you got what more can one say about it? 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. Hit pound 550 on your AT&T phone. You want to comment? Care to? Love to hear from you. Also want you to call John Ryan, Prestige Interiors, if you are interested in him in your kitchen. The Talk Station. 520. On a Wednesday, and it's Listener Lunch Wednesday. Yay! My dad and I are both looking forward to seeing you at Ron's Roost today. We love going to Ron's Roost. Great. It's like a West Side institution. So if you haven't been there, hey, you got an excuse to go today. I hope you will be able to join us. Always fun at Listener Lunch. The fellowship component is just... Actually, it's uplifting. If you're having a down day and you just want to put a smile on your face, there's a reason right there. Because my listeners that come to Listener Lunch are just the sweetest, nicest, kindest people. They really are. And the places we go, man, we are treated so well. And thanks to all those restaurants out there, we try to support local places, non-chains, and places that can't afford perhaps an advertising budget. It's just, the local component of it. Getting away from generica, if you know what I mean. It's like every city you go to, it's the same thing. It's one of the reasons why when I used to go on these motorcycle trips with my uncle. Speaking of motorcycle things, this Saturday, remember, it's going to be the Dragonfly motorcycle run. Join us in support of Dragonfly. But we used to go on these trips, and one of the rules of the road, among others, many of which will not be mentioned, had to go to no chain restaurants allowed. So we always ate at local joints, and that was one of the cool things about seeing this great land of ours on a motorcycle, just stopping in local joints and thinking about, gosh, I wish that place was down the street. Anyhow, this one is blowing my mind. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, yesterday, and he's been under the crosshairs and getting questioned by congressional members. He admitted yesterday, and in spite of all the press reports about that drone strike in Kabul, he admitted that he has no idea whether the person killed in that drone strike was a member of ISIS or maybe one of the people who helped us out. I kid you not. Senator Rand Paul asking the questions. I'm sorry, I said Congressman, but he's like Senator. Senator Rand Paul, during the Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearing on Afghanistan's withdrawal, quote, "The guy the Biden administration droned, was he an aid worker or an ISIS-K operative? Simple, straightforward questions." Blinken responding, "The administration is, of course, reviewing that strike, and I'm sure that a full assessment will be forthcoming." Now, you know that's not going to sit well with Rand Paul. Dude, answer the question. It was yes or no. Do you know whether it was an ISIS-K person or if it was an aid worker? Here's Rand Paul's response. So you don't know if it was an aid worker or an ISIS-K operative. Blinken said he couldn't speak to that in the setting they were in. He's done that quite a few times during these Q&As. suggesting when he says that, that it's an offline discussion because it deals with highly sensitive matters of intelligence that you and I aren't privy to. We're not allowed to know such things because, you know, we're the lowly unwashed masses. And I know that sounds hypercritical of intelligence issues, and I know that there's a reason to keep intelligence under lid, but he relies on this all the time during these questions. So there's one more opportunity for him to sort of do that. But Paul asked, so you don't know or won't tell us? Blinken's response? I don't know because we're reviewing it. Paul followed up with, you'd think you'd kind of know before you off somebody with a Predator drone whether he's an aid worker or an ISIS-K. Can you believe this? The man in charge doesn't know. He can't answer the question. I don't care about the intelligence. It's a yes or no question. It was widely reported in the media, and government officials in the White House administration came out and said, we got ourselves a would-be bomber. But upon reflection, apparently, we don't know if we got ourselves a would-be bomber. You think Biden was maybe trying to deflect attention? Like, is this comparable to the Clinton aspirin bombing scenario when Monica Lewinsky and her dress were all the news? Charlie, welcome to the show, and a very happy Wednesday to you.
Yeah, good morning. I love your program.
Oh, thanks.
I got two questions for you, Brian. The first question is, the left brags about how effective the UN is. Why couldn't the UN be a buffer zone, be a buffer force between the Taliban and the Americans, you know, the last few weeks of...
I'm with you, Charlie. I asked that kind of question, or I made an observation along those lines the other day. I can't remember who I was talking to. Maybe it was even Dave Williams, Taxpayer Protection Alliance, but the point being, isn't that the kind of thing the UN is for? You know, this global body, this global alleged peacekeeping force, and here we are getting ready to shut down a war. Boy, couldn't we use some, you know, neutral folks in here, you know, a la Switzerland kind of folks to sort of keep the place calm for a while we part company with the right people? Yeah, you'd think that would be a great UN job, Charlie, but, you know, the UN is corrupt, it's bloated, and it's also run by a whole bunch of people who hate the United States and don't give a damn whether we're successful or not.
Right. I agree with you.
That it? Charlie, I appreciate the call, my friend. Thanks very much for the... station. 531, coming up on 532. Going to jump over the phones. Got one caller on the line before we get the local story. 749-5500-800-823-TALK. Scott, that caller is you. Welcome to the show. Happy Wednesday.
Hey, good morning, sir. How are you on this fine day?
Can't complain, man. Can't complain. Nobody listened if I did.
It's good listening to you this morning. I just had to bring up something which I think is quite interesting in the scope of things, and that's the egging incident involving Larry Elder.
Yes. Scott, would you be any chance to be calling from Cleveland?
Well, I'm actually passing through Cincinnati as we speak.
How come we're not getting together for a cocktail today? Scott, you obviously sound like someone I know very well, and I know I am right. I'm glad you called into the program, Scott. It's great. Scott's a fraternity brother of mine. He lives in Cleveland, so you're out in town on business. The Larry Elder thing, you're talking about the white woman in a gorilla mask pelting Larry Elder and his staff with eggs, a story about which you would not know at all were it not for any single conservative news outlet. If this happened to a left winger, if this was a black left wing Democrat candidate or even a white one, and somebody in a gorilla mask, a white Trump supporter, that person probably would have already been crucified, and the media would have talked about it nonstop since it happened through the next several weeks. Am I right?
Yes. Had I done this to Kamala Harris, I would expect to be crucified because it would be a horrible thing to do. But I absolutely cannot believe that this didn't even hit the radar.
I know. When I saw that, it just blew my mind. But then again, Scott, we live in a time where they called Larry Elder a white supremacist. Think about that. You saw that.
You saw that
Dave Chappelle, the Black Klansman. You remember that episode, the skit? I don't know if you've seen it. It is absolutely side splitting. But that, I mean, this is life imitating comedy.
I expect fully one day for Peter Sellers to come out to that podium and announce that he, in fact, is Joe Biden. That's where we are.
It's where we are.
Hey, by the way, I'm glad when we were at UC, we did not have access to your EcoShield product, which you just promoted.
I wish we had it, man. That place would have been a lot cleaner than it is now. safe travels, hey, Matt. Next time you're in town, make sure you give me a shout, Scott. Great hearing from you. Love you, man. 749-5500-800-823-TALK. This is a topic we're going to be talking about coming up at 7:05 with Craig Kesey of Sorta. One of the largest, and thanks to Scott Wortman, Enquirer Reporting, we might have some money for the Western Hills Viaduct. Proceeds from the 0.8% sales tax increase we approved back in May of last year will cover the remaining $205 million needed to rebuild the viaduct based on a plan presented yesterday by Sorta. Sorta Board must approve the plan by next week, but yesterday's vote, the first indication of what the project's new sales tax from Issue 7 will pay for. Craig Kesey, speaking, he's the chair of Sorta, parenthetically, I should have mentioned that. He said, local leaders made this happen, and our county will be better off for generations to come because voters supported Issue 7. Infrastructure Committee also approved a plan for 30 other projects throughout Hamilton County, including new roads, sidewalks, that would be over the next couple of years. Sorta board member Brendan Cull quoted as saying, for anyone who questioned how Issue 7 would positively affect Hamilton County, right here, look at this. That sales tax raises about $100 million annually for the bus system, another $30 million each year for roads and bridges. So, and, of course, the Western Hills Viaduct, the largest project on the list. City and county transportation officials already secured $125 million in federal, state, and local funds. If the project total is $330 million, $205 million still needed, that is now coming from the sales tax. So for those who thought we weren't going to see anything positive out of it, the Western Hills Viaduct is in need of replacement. So there we have, finally, at least one project moving forward. At least we get the details coming up at 7:05 with Craig. I hope he can be around for that. And I hope he can stick around. We'll do a stack of stupid... Five 41. Happy Wednesday. I'm going to go over to the phones for you for the stack of stupid. 749-5500-800-823-TALK. We've been waiting for a comment on this one, and I think Mike's going to break it out as far as a topic this morning. Mike, welcome to the program. Happy Wednesday to you.
Happy Wednesday, Brian. So I found it awful coincidental that yesterday's 24/7 coverage of Bob Woodward's latest expose, The Peril, came out the day before and the day out that the election was going on in California. Now, the percentages bear it out that it probably wasn't necessary, but we all know how the left is about insurance policies, a la Page and Steele.
Of course.
And but what's even more troubling, and as Ricky told Lucy on many occasions, General Miley may have some splaining to do.
Yeah.
With a couple of his comments. The one particular right around after the election, when he basically called his counterpart in China and, according to the book, basically said, if we were to invade, I'll call and give you a heads up, but right now. So I just can't imagine.
The quote, I have it in front of me. He said he called China's top general. This is, again, according to the reporting by Bob Woodward in the book Peril. You and I have known each other for 5 years. If we're going to attack, I'm going to call you ahead of time. It's not going to be a surprise. That to his Chinese counterpart. That is really a frightening thing. If that actually happened, if he actually has that. That is a quote in the book attributed to him, though. So, you know, did Bob Woodward just make it up? And, you know, where's General Miley going to, how's he going to react to this? But frightening.
Well, I'm sure Rand Paul will have fun with him, too.
Oh, yeah. He said, Rand Paul said, quote, he should be court-martialed if true.
Exactly. And like I said, I just can't imagine General Eisenhower calling General Rommel on June 5th and say, you know what, we got a couple hundred thousand off Normandy, but, you know,
it's absurd.
Just wanted to give you a heads
up. It's absurd, isn't it?
Well,
and this all because
he missed that day in West Point when they talked about chain of command.
Commander in chief. Right. Civilian led army. Commander in chief. It's not the general. It is Donald Trump at the time.
Well, and then you got the third in line, Nancy Pelosi, who must, in her mind, that Donald Trump has a red button in the top right-hand drawer in the Oval Office that she called him and basically said, you know, within the nuclear chain of command, are we okay?
Probably. We all know that there is no such thing as the red button.
Exactly.
But now, let me pay devil's advocate real quick here, Mike, because my reaction when I first read this was mixed, and obviously I'm terribly frightened by it because this is would have been a form of a coup, you know, disregarding the president's orders. But let's just take the general at his word. And he did think, for example, that maybe Donald Trump was in balance. And because he lost the election, he was going to go rogue, which was the suggestion. Who's currently president, Mike? Joe Biden, right.
Well, and even in the general's comment that when he told Pelosi, I agree with everything, you know, I agree 100% with what you believe in or something like that. Once again, you are the uniform in that Pentagon.
Yes.
And you are the checks and balances, but you don't run the show.
Right. Exactly right. Which is why we hope that the president surrounds him or herself with really, really good people.
Right. One way or the other, we need to get to the bottom of this.
Oh, without question, Mike. And I suspect this one will have legs because you know this book is going to be a very popular one. I'd love to know what Bob Woodward's advance was for this one because people buy his books. True or not? This one is going to sell a lot of copies, and so I have the feeling this story will survive. Mike, good to hear from you, man. Stay well. $5.50. And a happy Wednesday. All right, over to the stack of stupid. New Hampshire father's been charged after he allegedly threw his infant daughter in a clothes dryer and turned it on.
Idiots doing idiot things because they're idiots.
What the hell? Authorities called to the home for a domestic violence incident between this Higgins guy, Michael Higgins, and the woman he is. I guess, baby daddy, too. They refer to the woman as the child's mother. Police said Higgins and the woman were arguing but couldn't find signs of physical altercation. Woman told police that Higgins had thrown their daughter into the dryer before turning it on. Police said in a statement the mother was able to quickly intervene. The baby was removed from the dryer. The child did not appear to have suffered any injuries, according to the police. In addition to endangering the child, he's facing charges of reckless conduct and criminal threatening.
Just walk away.
Yeah, and leave the baby out of it. Jeez Louise. According to Northern Kentucky, Brooke Endale of the Cincinnati Inquirer letting us know about this one. Northern Kentucky Middle School released a statement to parents alerting them to strange behavior students are exhibiting in class, like dressing like dogs and barking at classmates.
What?
School officials with Camp Ernst Middle School, Boone County School District, said they've seen an uptick in odd behavior. School students doing strange things like making animal noises toward each other, specifically barking. Students also wearing attire officials said was not school appropriate, like collars and leather straps with spikes. One school official reported saying we cannot allow kids to bark at each other or any other like behavior. Students also apparently destroying the soap dispensers in the bathroom. Officials determined the strange behavior stemming from, are you ready? Of course. TikTok challenges, which encourage students to act like dogs.
As is tradition.
Parents, teach your children well. Teach them not to follow the flock. Teach them not to do stupid things just because other stupid people are doing stupid things.
Now, who can argue with that?
A statement on Facebook read, we want to create awareness to parents so you can stay connected with your child and be aware of these trends. With all this being said, we appreciate your helping us by discouraging such behaviors. Talking with your child about the dangers of social media and the importance of being kind and respectful to all people. They said, isn't their goal to be, well, to discourage you from being creative, but rather to promote a safe and healthy culture. Police on Monday arrested a Galveston man for strolling on the beach while dressing up as Michael Myers from the Halloween series movies.
Walking, idiots doing idiot things because they're idiots.
Walking around with a fake bloody knife. Police stopped by the beach after somebody called 911 to complain about this guy. Responding officers stopped the man, put him in handcuffs, according to Facebook posts. The man was island attorney Mark Metzger, who uploaded pictures of himself as Myers on the beach and said the costume was a prank. Of course, this went viral on social media, showing Metzger walking around the beach and being handcuffed by the police. Authorities cited him for disorderly conduct and then released him. Metzger wrote in a second post his appearance on the beach was about, quote, bringing positive vibes to the gloom and doom out there, generating some laughter, helping people crack a smile, and restoring our faith in humanity through humor. I think he kind of missed the point of humor. You think he'd even seen one of those movies? I mean, Michael Myers is an indestructible murderer that goes around just ruthlessly stabbing innocent people. Okay? Yeah, I get it. Ha, ha, ha. We go to Indiana, St. Joseph County, where an intoxicated woman who also tested positive for COVID is being accused of biting a medic while in her treatment room on September 4th. Elizabeth Wilson was an intoxicated patient at Memorial Hospital who also tested positive for COVID. Medic was trying to keep her in her treatment room, but she refused. Wilson was combative and argumentative and took multiple people to try to restrain her while doctors ordered a Haddol shot to calm her. While trying to restrain her, Wilson allegedly bit the medic on his arm, breaking the skin. Witnesses saw the incident take place, and pictures were submitted as well. Now facing charges of battery against a public safety official. Not sure whether the recipient of the bite contracted COVID. And this is a story that's been around since I think COVID popped up, and I'll just mention the headline. Hand sanitizer exposures on the rise. Mother warns other parents after kindergartner collapses from alcohol poisoning. Please mind where you store the hand sanitizers. The stuff can be, well, deadly. 555, coming up at 556, 55 KRC, the Talk Station. Love to hear from you. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. Plenty to talk about coming up after the top of the hour news. Plus, we're going to learn how the Western Hills Viaduct is going to be funded and rebuilt from Craig Kesey with Sorta at 705, along with Chairman Alex Trantafilo at 730. We'll be right back after the news.
Super spreading injection of the most viral news
happening at the top and 30 minutes past
to provide updated guidance
on 55 KRC.
Coming up on 606 here, 55 KRC Talk Station. Hope you're having a wonderful Wednesday. My name is Brian Thomas. My executive producer's name is Joe Strecker, and got a good show lined up. Guest-wise, 1 hour from now, Craig Kesey from Sorta, he is going to tell us how the Western Hills Viaduct is going to be rebuilt based on a proposal that came out yesterday. If you recall that tax that we voted in, the 0.8 sales tax, a chunk of that was for roads and bridges and things and infrastructure. The vast majority, of course, for the bus system, but one of the promises was, as we, you know, in anticipation of the vote, was that, you know, the Western Hills Viaduct would get some love. And in fact, yesterday's meeting, it appears that the Western Hills Viaduct will get the balance of funding that it needs, in addition to the $125 million in federal, state, and local funds that have already been accumulated. The Sorta tax is going to end up filling in the $205 million hole. Thus, we get a new Western Hills Viaduct. We'll see what the other details are. There are a whole bunch of projects that Craig and the Sorta board talked about yesterday. So we're going to get the details on that. I'm fortunate to have him come back. Chairman Alex Trantafilo, always enjoy my conversations with the chairman of the Hamilton County Republican Party. He joins the program at 7:30. Of course, now that the Cincinnati Council field is locked in, the addition of the two more members, one Democrat, one Republican, after the tie was broke, we have, 34, I believe, total council candidates. We'll see if he can make any sense out of what's going to happen there. We've got township races, some big, big races that are out there. And he'll also comment on the redistricting that's happening right here in Ohio. Dragonfly Motorcycle Run. You are invited. In fact, if we're friends on Facebook, I just put a link to the Ride for Dragonfly, starting off at Queen City Harley-Davidson in Fairfield and ending there with some entertainment. And it's all for the Dragonfly Foundation. Great organization that helps families that are dealing with children with cancer. We'll go to the details with that with our guest at 8:05. Judge Napolitano, every Wednesday, with the exception of vacations and other things. Today, his column is captioned Twilight's Last Gleaming. President Joseph Biden, right at the top of the column he wrote, which is, again, captioned Twilight's Last Gleaming. It'll come out formally tonight at midnight. I'm blessed to get an advance copy. Quote from Joe Biden, September 9th, 2021, "This is not about freedom or personal choice." The libertarian-minded Judge Napolitano, I think I can anticipate which direction he is going to go on that one. The most mind-boggling story to me, and I did mention it in the last hour, but it's worth bringing it back up again, just because I'm sitting here, just, you know, this is the kind of thing that just puts an exclamation point on the lies that we are told. And we had the Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearing yesterday on the Afghanistan withdrawal, and so they're asking Secretary of State Antony Blinken questions. You may have watched some of this. And the mind-boggler for me was Senator Rand Paul grilling him on the withdrawal of Afghanistan, and specifically the bomb that was dropped. Now, you will recall, I'm sure everyone in my listening audience knows about the 13 service members that were blown up in a cowardly act of terrorism by ISIS-K as we are trying to get out of the country. The swift response from Joe Biden was to chuck a cruise missile over there, right? And we blew up. That's what we were told. Remember the news, right? The day happened. The day it happened, the day after it happened. Would-be suicide bomber just stopped by the Biden administration, successfully launched. And then the rumors started trickling out that, well, wait a second, we actually killed like 10 kids along with that. But, you know, well, it was collateral damage. That's what the administration says, you know, in a war. This kind of thing can't be controlled, but you know, we probably saved more lives than we accidentally killed. Because, of course, if that bomb had gone off, you know, the last one killed 13 service members. Lord knows how many might have died. And okay, well, I guess we got our pound of flesh from ISIS-K. Question asked by Senator Paul yesterday: hey, that guy Biden administration droned, was he an aid worker or an ISIS-K operative? Simple, straightforward, yes or no question. Right, Secretary of State Antony Blinken ought to be able to answer that one. Right. Not so much. The administration is, of course, reviewing that strike, and I'm sure that a full assessment will be forthcoming. That was the response. So, you know, like Rand Paul always does, so you don't know if it was an aid worker or an ISIS-K operative, he followed up, because Paul follows up. Blinken said he couldn't speak to that in the setting they were in. And as I pointed out previously, and you may know about this as well, they've got security issues. Of course, there are things that might, you know, reveal our interests from an intelligence standpoint. So you don't want to reveal something that, you know, to the general public, the unwashed masses out there, or our foreign enemies. You got to give them his due on that. So. But it is a yes or no question, and it is something the administration talked about specifically, bombing and drone striking a would-be bomber. So Paul asked, he said, so you don't know or won't tell us? Blinken's response, a stark admission, I don't know because we're reviewing it. Huh. And I'm immediately reminded of the Aspen factory. How could you not when Clinton blew up a building because Monica Lewinsky was making the news and he wanted to deflect attention? So we have this terrible situation unfolding in Afghanistan. We roll up the carpet. The Afghan army collapses immediately. And despite of all of the scenarios, our intelligence worked through and thought about and contemplated. We leave all the airports with the exception of one. We still leave people in country. We don't know where they are or who they are. We just know that the Taliban will be happy to lop their heads off because they helped us in some way, shape, or form. Or, in fact, they're Americans. Then, while we're hurriedly trying to get out of that single airport, and there's all kinds of Taliban checkpoints, and they're stopping people, and they're frisking people, and they're molesting people, sometimes, detaining people and not allowing them to get into the Kabul airport, in spite of the fact that that was the direction from the State Department. Hurry up, get to the airport, followed by, well, don't come to the airport, it's a little dangerous. A bomb blows up, killing 13 of our people. Bad news, epic failure, followed by what could be easily characterized as worse news. I don't know. I'll allow you to decide whether the blowing up of 13 American service members was a worse scenario than our terrible withdrawal out of Afghanistan, the Charlie Foxtrot that in fact is and was. So he's got heaps of bad news on his hands. So like Monica Lewinsky in the blue dress, you know, Bill Clinton has to do something to deflect attention from what's in the news, which is 24/7 fail. The administration's failure. The people who we left behind fail. There are still, according to Blinken yesterday, there's still 100 Americans still stuck in the country and thousands more Afghanis that probably would qualify for SIVs. Fail. We got to do something to make the news look better. We need our pound of flesh. We need to show the American people that we're on top of our game. Launch a missile. Do you know if you hit an ISIS-K person or was that an aid worker? I don't know. We haven't finished our evaluation. Can I ask a question? Since the intelligence is running all of these scenarios and following up, and gee, what's going to happen in Afghanistan? If we start pulling out, what's going to happen? Let's run the scenarios. Let's see if the Afghan, what happens if the Afghan military collapses? How long is it going to take before the Afghan military gets overrun by the Taliban? All these questions and scenarios. Before you launch a cruise missile and blow the hell out of a bunch of people, don't you want to have some definitive information on whether or not that person is indeed a terrorist? Is indeed a would-be bomber. Don't you want to know that definitively before you start chucking the missile out there? And why would you have to wait for a retrospective review of what happened to figure out whether or not you actually killed a bomber or an aid person? And let me add one more layer of stupid on top of this complete stupid mess. We aren't there anymore. How in the hell are we going to do a retrospective investigation? How are we going to look into this bombing? There's probably nothing left but vaporized bits of the guy we blew up anyway. Do we have resources, boots on the ground that can go to the bombing site and scrape a little of DNA off and find out if it's actually the person that they said we got or some aid worker? I'm sure the relatives would love to know. Incompetence. 615 55 KRC Talk Station, 749-5500, 800-823 Talk. I mentioned Cullen Electric. I love my friends. At 620 on a Wednesday, and a very happy one to you. Phone number if you'd like to call, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. Go to pound 550 on AT&T phones. If you got one of those, you get right to Joe Strecker, executive producer, and he'll put you up on the call screen. And what else is going on? Lots going on in the world. May as well dive on over to this. It literally got set off by this. I understand. You get the information. You put it up. Lots of people post it on Facebook. I think it was Greater Cincinnati Politics page or something. Put up a big map of the state of Ohio with all the infections, hospitalizations specifically for COVID-19. The whole thing is red, with the except for a little couple of green checks on the top. To indicate what? The red indicated people in the hospital that were unvaccinated. The green indicated people are in the hospital vaccinated. What does that mean? Well, not much. And we have, of all things, the Atlantic magazine. And if you are familiar with the Atlantic magazine, it is not exactly a bastion of conservative ideology. It is owned by the widow of Steve Jobs. Not that her ownership has anything to do with it, but I'm familiar with the Atlantic, and I've been reading the Atlantic. I used to get a subscription to the Atlantic back when I was in college. Why? Because I was in political science as an undergrad, and I had a college professor that insisted that we broaden our minds insofar as politics generally are concerned. Remember going into class, the first day of class, Dr. Abraham Miller, love that guy, took every one of his classes, he was an expert in terrorism. He flat out said that you all are ignorant. You're talking to a group of 18-year-olds, basically. And he wasn't talking about ignorant from an intellectual standpoint, only insofar as our knowledge and our content of world affairs is concerned. He asked, how many people, have subscribed to any newspaper? How many of you subscribe to any magazines? Remember, this is before the internet. The New Republic, The Atlantic, had all kinds of magazines out there that you could get real good information, deep dive into politics. It was like watching the McNeil Lehrer NewsHour on Sundays, really the only place you could get an in-depth dive with people who knew what they were talking about. So he was insistent that we broaden ourselves and wake up and read and do more. So I bought a bunch of subscriptions. I used to read all the time. I'm familiar with The Atlantic. Not, again, a left-wing magazine. Well, they did a little analysis over The Atlantic. The reporting on coronavirus hospitalizations, misleading. It does not account for the severity of the illness of those hospitalized, nor does it specifically identify if individuals are actually hospitalized for another reason. The Atlantic points out the hospitalization number is losing meaning. In their words, losing meaning. The number of individuals hospitalized with the virus goes back up to real high levels. We keep hearing about this. They identified hospitalizations as a vital metric for tracking the severity and risk of illness. It noted recently released study of hospitalization records that, suggests perhaps we shouldn't be relying on that because the hospitalization numbers do not talk about the severity of the illness. Some patients require intensive care. Got that. Some of the individuals are hospitalized, however, for other reasons entirely. Only later does the hospital figure out that they also happen to have COVID. Now, we dealt with this early on where a motorcyclist was reported to have died from COVID when, in fact, he was in a motorcycle accident and died at the hospital, but they checked him for COVID while he was there, listed as a COVID death. According to The Atlantic and the research that they looked to, some patients need extensive medical intervention, such as getting intubated. I'm just quoting from the article now. Others require supplemental oxygen or administration of the steroid dexamethasone. But there are many COVID patients in the hospital with fairly mild symptoms, too, who have been admitted for further observation on account of their comorbidities or because they reported feeling short of breath. Another portion of the patients in this tally are in the hospital for something unrelated to COVID and discovered that they were infected only because they were tested upon admission. How many patients fall into each category has been the topic of speculation. In August, researchers from Harvard Medical School, Tufts Medical School, and the Veteran Affairs Healthcare System decided to look into it. Citing another study, The Atlantic pointed out researchers have tried to get to the similar questions before. According to a study published in May by California doctors trying to identify why people were hospitalized, researchers found 40 to 45% were hospitalized for reasons unrelated to the virus. Again, just because you have COVID and you're hospitalized, you're not hospitalized because of COVID. Study found that between March 2020 and early January 2021, before vaccination was widespread, before the Delta variant had arrived, the portion of patients with mild or asymptomatic cases was 36%. Now, that's patients in the hospital. From mid-January through the end of June 2021, however, the number rose to 48%. In other words, the study suggests that roughly half of all the hospitalized patients showing up on COVID data dashboards in 2021 may have been admitted for other reasons entirely or had only a mild presentation of the disease. So admission into a hospital, you could be in there for 23-hour observation. That is not considered an admission. And I don't know if you land on one of these hospitalization sheets or not, but you're using up space. So, yeah, you got shortness of breath a little bit, but not enough to get admitted to the hospital. Probably send you home with some medication. You're out. Or you get admitted, and maybe you're admitted because in addition to discovering or realizing you have COVID and maybe have some mild symptoms with that, they find out that you're a walking heart attack risk or something else that requires you to stay there. You're going to be listed as a COVID-19 admission and show up on the big red chart, which says it's unvaccinated people who are filling up the hospitals. But maybe that is the case, but they're filling up the hospitals in large part for reasons that have nothing to do with COVID. 626, 55 KRCD Talk Station. Sean Hannity Morning Update coming up next. The first word for Turf Club. He had a call yesterday. He said he stopped in the Turf Club. Loved it. How can you not? What a great place. The food is fantastic. It just smells wonderful when you walk in there. And you're immediately greeted by the cool neon signs from way, 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 way back in the day. A lot of them are really old. You got all kinds of the Bebedor coolers, which I'm always just fascinated by. Those things are the coolest things. Cool coolers. No doubt about it. But inside, you will find a variety of ice-cold beer. They have a full bar. And you're there for, of course, the wonderful food as well. So you got the atmosphere. You got the great burgers. You got the great grilled fish. That grill is a masterpiece, a masterwork. Nothing but awesomeness comes off of that grill. The season or the toppings that you can order. .631 here at 55 Care CD Talk Station. Melodious strains of Little System there. Haven't heard that in a while, Joe. Good to hear it. Thanks for bringing it back out. Dusting her off. Putting it in the bump lineup. 749-5500-800-823. Talk to have local stories to dive on into. Governor DeWine delayed executions of four guys sitting on death row. Warren Hennis, now scheduled for execution December 17th of 2024 rather than January of 2022. I don't know how they came up with these dates. It's the only reason I'm reading them. Stanley Adams, now scheduled for execution February of 2025 instead of February of next year. John Drummond, now scheduled for execution April 2025 instead of April of next year. And finally, James Hanna, now scheduled for execution in May of 2025 instead of May of next year. Now, the reason the executions were stayed, not is because, I guess DeWine may be a fan of the death penalty, I don't know. He said it's ongoing problems involving the willingness of pharmaceutical suppliers to provide drugs. Execution drugs. Pharmaceutical companies started banning their sale back in 2011. Pfizer was the last one to do it. It ended sales in 2016. DeWine initially asked the prison system to look for alternatives, later came to the conclusion that lethal injection appears to be, to us, impossible from a practical point of view. There hasn't been an execution since Governor Kasich allowed one to go in July of 2018. Presently, 135 inmates on death row in Ohio. Now, there is a bipartisan bill out there. Bipartisan. They want to repeal the capital punishment laws and commute all these 135 death row folks to life imprisonment. More Republican sponsors than ever before, the Columbus Dispatch is reporting, but leadership in the Ohio Senate supports capital punishment. I personally do not. And there's a lot of people out there that probably deserve to die because of the heinous crimes that they committed, but I am also painfully aware that the state screws up and that there have been a lot of people that have been victims of, witnesses that make things up, that don't quite recollect facts properly, juries that have some bias, prosecutors that withhold evidence. We have a lot of people that have been previously executed that were later determined to have been executed erroneously because the state screws up. And if the state can take your life, that is a dangerous reality. Plus, prison sucks. You think life in prison is some kind of gift? Probably rather die, honestly, than spend my life in prison. But if it was my choice, that may be what I choose. But when the state can take your life, it's scary. And Governor DeWine wishes he was a dictator, I guess. He said he would instate a statewide mask mandate for K-12 schools if it wasn't for that dang legislative branch. The law that they passed earlier this year, impacting Governor DeWine's scope of authority. He had this to say yesterday: if I could put on a statewide mandate, if the health department could do it, the legislature has made it, he said he would. Legislators have made it very clear that if we put a mandate on for kids in schools to wear a mask, they would take it off. Previously, he had pointed out there isn't an appetite for such mandates, and now he seems to be turning the bend here and wanting to go the way of, Governor Whitmer or something. Thankfully, we have a legislative branch that has put the brakes on that. And let me just back up for a moment here. And, I have said it so many times, it seems worthy of bringing it back up again. Aren't we following the science? Governor DeWine didn't say, I wish I could instate a vaccine mandate. The vaccine, at least arguably, provides you some form of protection. It's not immunity anymore. It's just protection. So it has some tangible benefit for a lot of people. The masks that we're wearing don't do jack squat. Those little paper things, I don't know. It's just, I don't know why we keep trying to convince ourselves that those are actually doing something. There's research out there. And, you know, common sense, you got a vape pen, you got a cigarette, a cigar, you got a little smoke you can put in your mouth, put a mask on and blow it out. It's going to come right through. Flatulence comes through much heavier layers than you're wearing on your face. You can still smell it, can't you? Oddly enough, and I'd love to know what the size of the tiny particle is in flatulence relative to the size of the COVID-19 virus, but I think I'm willing to conclude, rationally so, that they're even comparable size. The mask isn't doing anything. Except driving people crazy. 636, 55 KRC, the talk station. Maybe we need to be honest about that one. Feel free to disagree with me, man, but I at least read up on it, and I'm applying my measure of common sense and reason. How about a career? Are you looking for a new career? It is 6:41 right now, 55 KRCD Talk Station. Happy Wednesday. Listener Lunch Wednesday. Another reminder today, Ron's Roost on the West Side. I know West Side Jim Kiefer is going to be there, but I will say more importantly, because my dad's going to be there, and I think that's just slightly more important than West Side Jim. We all love West Side Jim, though. So come to Ron's Roost and see my dad, see West Side Jim. Enjoy the fellowship that is Listener Lunch, some great food, and some really, really nice folks at Ron's Roost. Thanks for having us today, Ron's Roost. I look forward to heading on back. So we usually meet about 11:30, and, of course, you are invited. Let's go to the phone, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. Order in which they receive. Start with Chuck. Hey, Chuck, welcome to the program, and happy Wednesday.
Hey, good morning to you.
Thanks.
I've got a couple gripes about this reconciliation.
A couple?
Trillions and trillions of dollars that they want to spend.
A couple?
Well,
you have like 5,000 pages worth of objections, Chuck. Go ahead. I'm just sorry. I got a chuckle out of that. Go ahead.
Oh, it is funny and serious.
Yeah.
They're wanting to waste this money in so many places. It's not funny. They're creating inflation, and yet they're forgetting about the IOU lockbox for Social Security.
Like they always do.
If they want to spend trillions of dollars, I can't even find out how much the IOU is. I've done surfing, and there's no dollar amount, but I'm sure it's over half a trillion.
Well, it's only theoretical because, of course, the government borrowed against the alleged lockbox. It's supposed to have the Social Security fund socked away in it, so they play fast and loose with math. It's the new math, Chuck, and maybe that's why they're teaching this crap to our children in school, because, you know, old math, 2 and 2 is always equaled 4. And so if you saw that you had a promise to the American people, literally of trillions of dollars worth of benefits that have to be paid through the program, and you don't have any money there, that just simply means you can't pay. So I don't know when the new math worked in, but this is how our government works. You know, it's all an illusion. See our $28 trillion deficit. Crazy, man. But you're right, and Chuck, don't expect me to do anything until it completely collapses, because it's going to take a collapse or a really, really massive fury-generating belt tightening in that program or transformation of that program in order to bring about a change to that program, because no one will touch it now. All the seniors in the world out there, and anybody who's getting close to retirement age, the minute you say you're going to transform or change Social Security to make it solvent or try to bring it about solvency, they freak out and vote for the candidate and says, you know, I'm not touching your Social Security benefits. Because everyone has the mindset that, well, since I paid into it, I should get what's coming to me. Problem is, the program ain't the way it used to be when it started. You had 15 workers for every one recipient, and that one recipient only lived to like age 68. Now you got people living into their 90s and taking early retirement. Not that you can draw early, but you get the idea. You're on from 65 to, say, 85 or 90, and there's only 3 workers for every 1 recipient. Now that's just upside down, and the math's not going to work out. Something has to be done. But because people are always of the mindset, I paid into it, and therefore, damn it, I'm going to get my money out of it, no one will touch it, even though it's a disaster. Thank you, Chuck. Got me an opportunity to vent on that one. Mike, welcome to the program. Happy Wednesday to you, sir.
Hi, Brian. Saw a thing in the article last night. They were talking about the there's a doctor on the Buck Sexton show talking about how the CDC is picking, they're cherry picking their with the COVID vaccine because he compared it to the chicken pox. And they tell you if you've had chicken pox, don't get the vaccine. But with COVID, they're not saying that.
He's right.
Like they need to quit cherry picking.
Yeah, that's a good point, Mike, because, you know, I'm one of those kids. I had chicken pox, and right. I didn't get the vaccine for it because I had chicken pox. Now, later in life, you need the shingles vaccine. If you had chicken pox, my understanding is you can get shingles, and therefore you right. want to get a shingles vaccine, but, you know, it's a separate thing. But good point, Mike. And I had a caller yesterday that had COVID back in Thanksgiving of last year. She got her antibody test because, you know, the doctors are saying, well, that'll only last you a couple of months. Now, here we are 7-8 months later, and she still tests positive for the antibodies. So that's, you know, that gives me some comfort right there. Thank you, Mike. Guess we're out of time. Got to go. Appreciate the call, though. 749-5500. It's 650 at 55 KRCD Talk Station. And a very happy Wednesday to you. Listen to Lunch Wednesday, like I said. Ron's Roost, be there. I hope you can be there. And here's one I definitely wanted to get to. This is a rather frightening reality. Of course, I earlier in the program, I was dwelling on the fact that the good general, Milley Miley, had no idea who was killed in that Kabul airstrike. The idea that we were told that it was that evil terrorist bomber that was getting ready to kill more people, and we were all patting ourselves on the back that we got a bad guy as we were getting ready to, you know, clear completely out of Dodge. And he's asked about the question yesterday, and he doesn't know. He doesn't know if it was an ISIS-K operative or an aid worker. So how is it that we could get the reports right after it happened that we got a bad guy and he's sitting here, you know, a couple of weeks later and he has no clue? That bothered me and it irks me, and it's reflective of the lies from government. Now, top U.S. officials talked about this week about Al-Qaeda reforming within Afghanistan, and they're giving it a timetable. And remember how quickly the Afghan military was going to stand up. The intelligence predicted, well, it's going to take a year or two before they're finally overrun by the Taliban. At least that was their kind of the predictions. I guess they sort of anticipated the outcome in advance that it was going to collapse. It just happened on a faster timetable. Now they're talking about Al-Qaeda reforming in Afghanistan. They're suggesting in the next year or two. New York Times reporting the current, and this is a quote from Lieutenant General Scott Barrier. The current assessment, probably conservative, is 1 or 2 years for Al-Qaeda to build some capability to at least threaten the homeland. That will be us. He's been on to say, we're thinking about ways to, brace yourself, are you ready? We're thinking about ways to gain access back into Afghanistan with all kinds of sources. We are prioritizing that effort. We'll continue to prioritize it. But we have to be careful to balance these very scarce resources with this pivot to China and Russia. Yeah, so we got China and Russia to worry about, along with all the other evil people out in the world that want to kill us. Now we're talking about Al-Qaeda actually being able to reform and launch an attack on the United States of America, literally threaten the homeland on his timetable, guessing between 1 and 2 years. Now, I thought this was rather interesting. Representative Michael Waltz, he's a Republican out of Florida. He was talking to Fox News, and he had this to say. You know, we're on the road to future attacks. I think you're going to see that in the next year with Al-Qaeda 3.0 partnered with Haqqani Network and the Taliban. And he said this, you know, a couple weeks ago or a week or two ago. Within a year, he's obviously got the same level of intelligence or getting the same intelligence as Lieutenant General Scott Barrier. But moving forward with what his quote was. And it's a valid point that we need to keep in mind. Except this time, he said, when the next generation has to go back to deal with it, they will have no bases. We have given them away. No local allies. They're being massacred by the Taliban as we speak. We'll have to deal with an army's worth of American equipment that the Taliban now has. It's all just heartbreaking and infuriating. Leon Panetta, who was under Barack Obama, CIA director, you may remember that. He also expressed concern about Afghanistan. quote, the Taliban taking over Afghanistan is pretty much the same Taliban that controlled Afghanistan on 9/11. It's clear to me they're going to continue to support al-Qaeda, and I think they will plan additional attacks on our country as well as elsewhere. Okay, how you feel now? Frightening stuff. Dr. Anonymous, welcome to the program.
Hi. Love your program, Brian.
Thank you very much.
I have to talk to you about this. I don't know how I can follow what you just said, though. But
it's all
this
right.
is bad also, and it's right here in Cincinnati. So I'm trying to keep my identity.
Go ahead. I understand.
Because I work for TriHealth, and we do not have Regeneron. We got a system-wide email yesterday stating that we no longer have any Regeneron to give to people. For those who don't know, that's the monoclonal antibody that you're supposed to give to people with COVID infections. I've treated 95 COVID infections. I've given it to about 20 people. I think it really works.
That's what I've heard over and over. But you're saying you can't get it.
For this to work, you have to give it early, like in the first 10 days.
But your point is, Dr. Anonymous, you have to have it in order to give it to people. Is there a sourcing problem?
Well, apparently the federal government has taken over the entire supply from the manufacturer, and they're in charge of distributing it. Now, we have been ordering it all along, and sometimes supplies have been tight, demand outstripped supplies. We told we can only give it to the sickest of people. Other times we have enough to give around. This is the first time ever in the entire time I've been using it that we have zero. That we have ordered it and we got nothing.
Oh,
and not
my.
Only did we get nothing, we didn't get an explanation why we got nothing. Now, we are charitably, the officials at TriHealth are charitably assuming the government is prioritizing it to other places where there is more COVID. I've heard in Alabama they don't have Regeneron either.
Oh,
I got a message from a congressman who'll go nameless who I've been discussing this with. I don't know what can be done about this, but this is terrible.
Well,
we should get a ration supply if there's truly a demand problem,
indeed.
But we should get some.
I cannot argue with your point. And, you know, the minute the government takes over, it's like everything. There is going to be, on some level, politics involved. When you mention some states don't have any and certain health institutions don't have any, when others do, you got to wonder how these decisions are being made. Ugh, that is frightening. Thank you for calling. I do have to go. Dr. Anonymous, thank you so much for calling. Coming up after the top of the hour, we're going to be talking to Craig Kesia, sort of, about the Western Hills Viaduct and other projects. Stick around.
If you're vaccinated,
you must wear a mask.
Why?
Confusing the kids and the parents.
Get the correct information.
Getting answers.
Get the facts.
On 55 KRC.
It's 7:06. And a very happy Wednesday to you. I am very pleased to bring back and welcome to the Back to the 55 KRC Morning Show from Sorta, Craig Kesia. Craig, good to have you back on the program. Sounds like you had some great developments yesterday insofar as infrastructure is concerned.
Yeah, we think so, and thanks for having me back on.
Happy to do it. The Southwest Ohio Regional Transit Authority is, of course, Sorta, and they had their infrastructure committee meeting yesterday. And Craig is the chair of the Sorta board, and he has some news for us about, let us start with, something that's been on everybody's mind for a long time, the Western Hills Viaduct. Now, it's not the Brent Spence Bridge. We still have that problem hanging over our head, and I didn't expect you to solve that one. But this 0.8% sales tax increase that the voters approved, I think by large majority, was to go for not just the buses and the bus system itself, but also for infrastructure. So you have an infrastructure committee to talk about where that $30-plus million is going to go. Tell us about the Western Hills Viaduct.
Yeah, so 25% of the sales tax goes for infrastructure, and thank you. I guess it was a large enough majority. Let's say it that way. So what happened with that was the funds are set aside is about $30 million a year for the 25 years of the levy. And municipalities throughout the county were allowed to propose projects that would go against a scoring system that was set up with the county and the integrating committee that has to approve projects ultimately. We used that scoring system against everything that was submitted. The Western Hills Viaduct was the priority project by both the city and the county. It scored the highest. It was a request for multiple years. And so we've been able to procure $205 million to go toward the viaduct, which, as far as we understand, should fully fund the project.
Yeah, my understanding, and thank you to Scott Wartman and the Enquirer reporting on this, checking into it, city, county, and transportation officials had already shored up $125 million in federal, state, local funds, mm-hmm. leaving a $205 hole, which you and just indicated would be filled. Now, do you borrow the money, I guess? Is that how the project goes? And then you pay off the interest and the principal with the annual sales tax from the SORTA levy?
Well, the project will be managed by the city and the county, obviously, and so I believe that's their plan for it, yes.
Fantastic. Now, on to other projects that made the list that you might be considering, Craig. And actually, these aren't yet set in stone. What is the next phase? Let's just stick with the West Hills Viaduct for the moment. Is it done now? Does your approval of that yesterday, or what's the next phase?
So it was approved by the Infrastructure Committee of SORTA, which was really based on the scoring system that was done with external firms reviewing all the projects. And so that'll go to the full board next week. And then from there, it goes to the Integrating Committee of Hamilton County, which is the ultimate approver of all the projects per the changes to the Ohio Revised Code that were done before the levy was passed. There's no reason to believe that these won't all, you know, kind of flow through, but that is the formal process.
All right. And you did, according again to the reporting, you did approve the plan for 30 other projects throughout Hamilton County. It includes roads, sidewalks, et cetera. Anything stand out as, you know, I mean, obviously the West Hills Viaduct, that's a huge, multi-million, a $300+ million project. There's nothing else on the list that comes close to that, is there?
Oh, no, nothing like that. So that's by far the largest single project. But there were 29 other projects, so 30 in total, in 22 different municipalities throughout the county. So that's what we're excited about, was that, you know, lots of different parts of the county were able to access these funds, propose great projects. And so, like you said, roads, bridges, sidewalks, really enhancing the infrastructure. If you remember, you know, we wish we had more. If you remember during the levy discussion, there's something like $3 billion of infrastructure investment needed. So this will be certainly a big help, and the West Hills Viaduct's a huge opportunity, but there's lots more to do.
Clearly. I guess any projects on the list that you just kind of wondered how in the hell they got there? I'm just going to worry about the bizarre. You know, people, every time there's a pile of money, Craig, you and I both know, there's like 9,000 people who want to have a chunk of it. So I was just kind of wondering what you had to throw out of the mix.
You know, there wasn't too much that had to be thrown out, really almost nothing, as the scoring system that's being used here is very similar to the scoring system that the Integrated Committee uses for ODOT funds. So I think that most of the municipalities understood what those, you know, rules would be and what would be eligible. So we had a couple projects that were submitted by developers rather than by the cities, and those were tossed out because it has to come from the city. But otherwise, all the projects were great.
Okay. And city versus county projects, is there an extra layer that when you're talking about doing something within the city versus the county?
So no. So any jurisdiction in the county and the county itself were eligible to request, you know, or propose projects. And so, you know, it's, like I said, jurisdictions throughout the county from, let's see, Anderson Township, Coleraine, Deer Park, Forest Park, Glendale, Lincoln Heights, Mount Healthy, North College Hill, just, you know, all throughout the county, municipalities found good things to do.
Anderson Township got some money?
Yep.
I didn't think they needed money out there, Craig. That's kind of, well, I mean, I half jokingly say that, thinking and knowing probably Drew Pappas is listening. So, and I'm not insulting my friends in Anderson Township. It's in the same way I say, where's all the affordable housing in Hyde Park, right? I mean, there are practical realities. There are wealthy neighborhoods, and there are neighborhoods that aren't as wealthy. Does the wealth base, the home average home value, the average median or mean income of any given neighborhood have any play in where this money's going to go?
Yeah, so the scoring system does recognize areas that have more economic need, and so they get a higher score in the system. The way it actually worked this year was that the number of projects submitted matched pretty closely to the dollars available. So in future years, as folks maybe see that this is real, we may get more more requests than we have funds available if that was not the case this year.
I'm surprised that was not the case this year.
Yeah.
Anyhow, any other ones stand out among the projects that are getting funding, Craig? Because I know there's people out there in neighborhoods kind of wondering if they're going to get any.
Sure. It's hard to go through 30 all at once.
No, I understand.
It's a lot of the major thoroughfares. Coleraine Avenue is getting some work done. Plainfield Road, Miami Avenue, lots of different places. And then the information will be up and available on our website. I know that Inquirer this morning posted a list of projects as well. So I think there's plenty of places to see it, and I think people will be excited.
All right, and once you have already passed on the SORTA board, you said it goes to the full board, then the integrating committee for final passage. Is the opportunity for public comment over? I figure if you didn't already make the list of projects to be considered, that the ship has probably sailed, but there may be some people out there going, whoa, wait a second, I want to be heard on this. Is there going to be public comment?
Well, I think that, obviously we're always open for feedback. I think the way this process is working was, the municipalities would submit and the projects would be scored. The scoring would create the priority of the project list. And so that's pretty clear-cut how that would work. If folks have new projects they want to submit, they have to wait till next year.
All right. That's not that far away. Passage of time is going by quickly. All right. Since you're the SORTA board chair, I have to ask you, going back to the whole negotiations with the Cincinnati School District and buses and the shortage of bus drivers, are you still in need of bus drivers? Is that still, I'm just offering folks maybe a job opportunity on one hand, but another just to give people a sense of reality about the SORTA system itself and whether there are enough drivers to go around.
Yeah, no, we certainly are still in need of drivers, and we're hiring aggressively, offering sign-on bonuses and helping folks get their CDLs and things like that. So plenty of opportunities that would be they're great jobs. And really, I think, our operators have a great place in the community, and so it'd be wonderful if folks want to go to metro.com and they can see the website there. It has all the information on that as well.
All right. I always worry about that when I see Joe Strecker going immediately to his computer after someone says something like that. Craig Casey, I can't thank you enough for spending time with my listeners and me today, bringing us up to speed on the projects that are coming our way, thanks to that new 0.8% tax. I think that's one of the things that people will really embrace. Once they see the money being applied to all of these very necessary projects, I think a lot of people will be very happy that the 0.8% tax actually got approved.
Well, Brian, one of the things I would tell you is we take that responsibility very seriously, and so been actively making sure we're staying on timing with both the bus implementation and these infrastructure projects. So thrilled that it's gone so well so far, and we hope it continues.
I'll look forward to getting additional updates from you, Craig. Anytime you need to speak or let folks know about what's going on, I'm always here for you, and look forward to having you back on the program
again. Thanks, Brian. Yep.
Take care of yourself. 7:15 coming up on 7:16, 55 Care CD Talk Station. Stick around. Ed, coming up at 7:21 here at 55 Care CD Talk Station. A very happy Wednesday to you. Alex Santofilo coming up in the next segment. Following up on Dr. Anonymous's point earlier, and I know who that person is, and I know he is, in fact, a licensed medical professional. He is a doctor, and he was talking about the fact that his healthcare system that he works for, which is why he wanted to be anonymous, as you mentioned, TriHealth, they don't have any more monoclonal antibodies. The solution, or rather one of the treatments they give to COVID-19 folks who have just recently been infected to reduce the symptoms. And apparently it works very, very well. And this particular physician said he's used it in 20-some-odd cases and that he had very good luck with it and blah, blah, blah. And that's been widely reported that the monoclonal antibodies work in terms of reducing the severity and the duration of coronavirus. So you think, great, that would be a wonderful thing to have. The Dr. Anonymous just forwarded me a Newsweek article, and you can find it yourself. Captioned, Alabama doctors concerned about Biden administration limiting monoclonal antibody treatments. And the question is, well, why would they limit them? Why is this particular hospital system not being allocated? And he pointed out that the U.S. government is now controlling the supply of monoclonal antibodies and who gets their orders filled. And as I mentioned, the good doctor is obviously when you have the government coming in control of these things, politics certainly is factored into the equation. Alabama, not exactly a bastion of left-wing ideology. And as the Newsweek article points out, Alabama doctors are concerned about the impact the health systems and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services decided to temporarily limit these orders. Says the summer surge in coronavirus cases prompted spikes in orders for monoclonal antibodies. And here's your point. 70% of orders are being sent to only 7 states. And with a limited supply of doses, HHS announced it was temporarily limiting the number of doses that could be ordered at any given time in an effort to ensure treatment remains available for future patients. I don't know what the hell that means. I just know it means that the more conservative your general population happens to be, the less likely it is the Biden administration, apparently, in their Health and Human Services Department, is going to fill your monoclonal antibody order. And isn't that a scary proposition? And why wouldn't they foster and encourage more use of monoclonal antibodies? Why wouldn't they be pressing manufacturing companies to make more? You know, a push to donate blood. That's because they all want you to get the vaccine. It's as if it's the only thing out there in the world that is going to possibly address this. Same thing with hydroxychloroquine. You know, a drug that has been used for decades and decades. Some doctors have had some success with their patients using it. A physician can accurately and adequately and properly and on-label prescribe that drug, the Nobel Prize-winning drug that it is, for parasitic infections. Yet the off-label use, and so many physicians use drugs off-label all the time after consultation with their payment and with their patient and informed consent, they're being denied the opportunity to use that drug. Why is that? And as we note, if you just isolate that, well, the vaccine is not a cure. It was touted as a preventative. It was touted as like the measles vaccine, something that will prevent you from getting the coronavirus. But now we know that's not as the case. Now the focus is, well, it'll reduce the severity. If that's all that does is reduce the severity of it, why wouldn't you allow monoclonal antibodies or hydroxychloroquine or anything else some learned physician that has done the research recommends to you with your informed consent to take? Big brother, man, this is all you folks that want nationalized health care. Oh, we want it socialized medicine. There you go. There's socialized medicine for you. It's basically one giant screw you. Do it my way or don't get anything and die. Go ahead. Go away from me. 725. 55KRC, the talk station. Get your cancer screenings, folks, please. Prostate cancer. It's 7:30 at 55 KRC Talk Station. Hope you're having a wonderful Wednesday. 1 hour from now, Judge Anna Napolitano. Top of the next hour, Dragonfly Motorcycle Run. I hope you can join us. We're going to be riding for the Dragonfly Foundation, a fantastic organization helping out families with children who are struggling with cancer. Oh, geez. Anyhow, without further ado, so happy to welcome, as I always am, the chairman of the Hamilton County Republican Party. Welcome back, Alex Trantafilo. It's good to have you on today, sir.
Brian, good morning. Always good to be with you, sir.
And, of course, we usually tend to dwell on regional politics, local politics, and that makes perfect sense, you being the chair of the Hamilton County Republican Party. I just got to bounce this off your head. This thing blew my mind. And I know you've been paying attention to the whole Afghanistan situation, but Secretary of State Antony Blinken's admission yesterday that he has no idea who got killed in that drone strike they were crowing about in the aftermath of our service people getting blown up. I mean, do you not recall the reports that we got the bad guy with the bombs in the truck and that it was a terrorist from ISIS-K that was going to kill more people? And thank God we were on the ball with the drone strike because he's not here anymore. Now he says he has no idea because they're reviewing it to determine whether it was someone who was friendly with us or some ISIS operative.
Where do you even begin with this administration, Brian? You know, I mean, where do you even begin? I mean, the rank incompetence that Joe Biden has tolerated within this administration is scary. What's happened here, and look, not only do I disagree with President Biden ideologically, obviously he's far to the left. I'm to the right and sometimes far to the right. The fact of the matter is they have not put competent people in place. You know, I mean, with President Trump, we had competent people at the top of this administration. Mike Pompeo was first in his class at West Point. He was an Army officer. He had been a congressman. He'd served. These academic types, you know, these people that I don't even know where they got them. I think they're analysts that he's put at the top of these jobs, like Antony Blinken. It's ridiculous. And the fact, Brian, that there's been no accountability for what happened in Afghanistan. I just remember a day where you would have a major, crisis in the foreign policy like this. The cause being a poor administration, and heads would roll, right? Somebody would lose their job. No one's lost their job in this administration for the completely botched Afghanistan withdrawal. So, gosh, yeah, am I surprised by Blinken? I mean, the incompetence of the administration, unfortunately, does not surprise me, but it should outrage people. And, this presidency is already in free fall from where I sit. And it's very hard to watch because I love my country, and I would want there to be some success out of the administrative branch or out of the executive branch and out of the military. But this president and the people who he's put in charge in these important jobs are failing the American people, Brian.
Well, without question, and how could I argue with that excellent summation? I guess I just I worry because I have so many people that suggest, and I think we can all come to some reasonable conclusion, being independent and sort of acting like Switzerland on the whole deal, that Joe Biden is not 100% there. It's pretty obvious. The guy fumbles. He makes terrible misstatements. They won't allow him to do Q&As. That in and of itself is a massive red flag. Heck, they shut off his microphone again the other day. They wouldn't allow him to even answer Q&As. So someone is his puppet master and controlling the shots. But then the follow-up is, we need to get rid of him because he's lost his mind or isn't in charge. That leaves us with Kamala Harris. I mean, I don't view that as a step in a better direction. Alex?
No, I agree with that. Obviously, she's a far left California liberal and really an extreme of American politics. But, Brian, this goes to a greater point. And I've taken a little bit more of an aggressive tone in my social media lately, calling out some of the press. I enjoy a decent relationship with our local media. I'm treated fairly most of the time. I can point to some situations where I feel like I've not been treated fairly.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is, on the national scale, there ought to be a serious national dialogue about the mental competency of the commander-in-chief and the man who controls the nuclear codes of the world's greatest nuclear arsenal. And if this were Donald Trump or any Republican, let's take Trump out of the mix, if this were George W. Bush demonstrating the kind of mental acuity issues that we see with Joe Biden, there would be a national dialogue. After one of these press conferences, you would turn on the morning news at 7 a.m., the nice talking heads on Good Morning America, and there would be a dialogue. Is this president fit to lead the country? And what's unfortunately happening with him does happen with some older folks, and that's perfectly acceptable that people age and these things occur.
Right.
What's not acceptable is that they're president of the United States of America. So there should be a national dialogue about this, Brian, and it's a shame to me that it's not happening, and it shows really what kind of a biased media we have in this country. And then for that, we all suffer.
Well, and that I had a friend call me this morning, talk about biased media, that, and I won't dwell on it because we're going to get to local politics when we come back from a break. But the whole Governor Newsom recall effort and the idea that the Republican front runner Elder was pelted with eggs by a white gorilla mask wearing protester that didn't get any press coverage at all. If that isn't revealing of the bias of national media, because we all know and don't even need to speculate, the crucifixion that whoever would do that to a black Democrat would get in the social media and on the streets at the moment it happened.
Well, they would deserve that crucifixion, just as this person would, in the sense that this was a racially motivated attack. There's just no question in my mind. And that double standard and that hypocrisy is what has half of the country believing that the mainstream press is untrustworthy. And that's just a dangerous place to be, because if you can't get good information, in a Democratic Republic like ours, Brian, if you can't get good information to make decisions, you can't make good decisions, and that's a real problem.
No doubt about it. More with Alex Trentavila. We'll talk local stories. The candidate list is solidified for Cincinnati City Council, the mayoral race. We've got that, but there are also some big township races to talk about and the all-important topic of redistricting. And we'll get to those with Alex Trentavila after I mention your wellness center. Guys, I'm talking to you. Testosterone therapy. Yep, you got to maximize your testosterone levels in order to get back what you used to have when you were in your 20s. Deep sleep, physical energy, mental clarity, lean muscle. Yeah, Remember your libido? Yeah. Remember it was rocking back in your 20s, maybe 40s and 50s and 60s. And it's like, well, what happened to that? ED can also. to Shy 742 here at 55 KRC, the talk station. Brian Thomas with Hamilton County Republican Party Chair Alex Chiantafilo. Alex, they finally solidified the list of candidates, and I guess the Secretary of State split the tie for the two that were had some errors in their signature request, but substantially complied was the ultimate conclusion. So we have now 34, I believe, candidates for Cincinnati City Council, and Avtab Perval and David Mann for mayor. What's your assessment of the situation, Alex? I know it's tough being a Republican and talking about city politics, but we do have some good people on council serving right now, and there seem to be some decent folks in the mix that are running. So what do you think?
Well, I think that we have an unprecedented opportunity here to change what's going on at City Hall, Brian. You know, we've seen chaos and corruption overwhelm the building. And, you know, actually the temperature's come down on the City Hall over the last several months because Republicans got appointed there. Liz Keating, Steve Gooden, Betsy Sunderman have joined with good people like Christopher Smitherman to bring the temperature down and to be adults at City Hall. But let's not forget what happened there. We had four members of the Cincinnati City Council of nine indicted, that is criminally charged for conduct related to their work, Brian. I mean, sometimes it's so preposterous that we just don't even see it. Imagine if your company, the nine people who ran your company, four of the nine people who ran the company where you work every day were charged with crimes related to their work in your company.
Yeah, like embezzlement I get it. It's not like they got a domestic violence charge that has nothing to do with their role as Cincinnati City Council. You're talking about taking bribes, basically.
Correct. But criminal misconduct on the job is alleged in four different episodes. So, I mean, it's just time for a change. The good news for us is that we do, as Republicans, we have four people. I want to just make one very quick point to anybody who lives or votes in the city. Folks, you need to focus on the four Republicans and leave the other five votes blank.
Yep.
These people are competing for nine spots. Vote for the four Republicans and stop voting, period. If you think there's an acceptable moderate Democrat or Charterite, et cetera, I'm sorry, folks. The only way to fundamentally change that building is to elect people that are endorsed by the Republican Party who have some conservative leaning. Betsy Sunderman leads our ticket in that regard. Very strong conservative. Liz Keating is a wonderful candidate. Steve Gooden, a great candidate. And then who doesn't know and respect the long-term career of Tom Brinkman as a great Republican and conservative? This is your opportunity in the city of Cincinnati to change things. Vote for four and stop voting. That's how we make a difference. Again, Brian, I could go on and on, but the fact of the matter is those four people can combine with some other level-headed people that may get elected and actually change things at City Hall.
Right, and one of those, if you're inclined to vote Democrat, and the point would be do the same thing Alex recommended, vote for the core group that you really think are going to do a good job. And I think in the Democrat field, I at least got to give Kevin Flynn some props. He at least is a reasonable guy. He's willing to talk politics here on the morning show and elsewhere, and he's not some kind of flaming, you know, far-left commie liberal.
Well, you know, far be it for me to be in a partisan environment of elections for me to say anything nice, but I will say that, yeah, Kevin Flynn's a gentleman. I mean, I've disagreed with some of the votes he took.
We're talking to the Democrat voters now, Alex. We're not talking to our Republicans. We're not telling our Republicans to go over there and add a fifth name to the list. We're going to stick with your
Correct.
Four. And that was advice that Vice Mayor Smitherman always gave to my listeners all the time. Don't vote for all the slate of candidates. Limit it. And so you're echoing that today, and I truly appreciate it. Let's pause for a moment. We'll come back with Alex, get one more segment, and learn about at least redistricting. And, Alex, to the extent you've got some other local races within the county you want to highlight for us, we'll do that coming up next as well. Don't go away. Fasten Pro Roofing, great folks at Fasten Pro. It's going to be even greater. You know, my I almost said son-in-law. He's not that yet. I don't want to frighten him away. But my daughter's longtime boyfriend, he's been in the roofing business for quite some time. He's going to be working for them beginning in October. I referred him to them, and he is a good kid, and he is a solid worker. So you're going to have him to deal with down the road. At least that's the way it looks. But bottom line is Fasten Pro hires quality people, experienced roofers, and they're honest. You don't get honesty from a lot of roofers, and it's a sad, sad thing. I particularly think of my senior listeners. Now, you know, I don't go on my roof, but can I climb a ladder, and could I if I wanted to? Yes, of course. But, you know, if you're struggling with your health issues or something like that, or maybe you're incapable, or if you've got vertigo, you're not going up there. You have to trust someone to go up there and give you an honest assessment. And quite honestly, there is a whole bunch of roofers that are not honest in their assessment. They'll tell you you need to replace your roof right then and there, and you really don't. You've got more years of life in it. For an honest assessment, and don't wait for a problem. Fasten Pro insists that I tell you, call them. Get the free inspection and free quote for any work that actually has to be done. Get it early. Maybe you're just interested in getting a skylight installed or gutter guards installed so you don't have to clean your gutters. Anything up there, Fasten Pro Roofing, including siding. Don't go vinyl. Go with that Hardy board. Oh, my word. They did such a great job on our roof replacement, and that siding looks great. 774-9495 is the number to call for that free inspection and free. /7:51 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station. Brian Thomas with Alex Trentafilo, head of the Hammond County Republican Party. Special requests, and of course, I will also ask the request, but I was contacted. Chairman Alex, can you make it to Ron's Roost for listener lunch today?
I'm going to do my best. It's on my calendar, thanks to our good friend Westside.
That's who called me. You know it. If you can, no pressure, no pressure.
Well, all right. It's close to home, but I'll be downtown. But I'll try to maybe get west and visit with you guys. I'm going to make my best effort today.
Fantastic. All right, now, are there any talent before we, you know, got a limited amount of time. Just want to know if there are any highlights you want to mention in terms of township races and other races in Hamilton County that are coming up.
Well, yeah, quickly over in Anderson Township, an important race to the party. Josh Girth and Lexi Lawson.
She's great.
Running in Anderson Township. That's a great Republican community, and you know, great, wonderful place to live. The way to keep it that way is to keep electing Republicans. You know, our good friend Andrew Pappas is stepping down after 8 years of great service to the township,
yeah.
And then we need Lexi and Josh. You know, I could go all around the county. What I want to tell people is look for your Republican sample ballot when you're going in. We've got school board races, Brian,
ooh,
that are hugely important this year. And, you know, again, we could spend all day ticking off names most people wouldn't remember.
Sure.
But the way to do this is to, first of all, you can go to our website at Hamilton County Republican Party. By the end of this week, we'll have everybody up and posted their names. And then look for that pink piece of paper, the official trademark sample ballot of the Republican Party when you're going in, so you know who to vote for school boards. We've got great candidates running in the northeastern part of the county, in Sycamore Township. We've got some great fresh new faces running. Anderson Township, again, a really strong slate of candidates running for school board. And really all across the county,
yeah,
we want to make a difference at the school board level because the liberals have really asserted themselves to do damage to our kids, and when critical race theory is such a problem. So we need to really step up and assert ourselves as regular, you know, Republicans, conservatives, to educate our kids the way that they should be educated. So that would be my one message.
Excellent message, and I can't imagine any Republican-leaning school board candidate approving or otherwise adopting the idea of critical race theory, which is just dividing our children based on color of their skin. So safe bet there. Now,
yep.
I was just going to say, where are we in the remaining minute and a half or two? Where are we with redistricting? I know this has been an interesting year for that.
Yeah, redistricting right now has become obviously a partisan fight. They almost always are. The Democrats, Brian, they want a state that's 50-50 by the way we draw the lines, when the state, in fact, is not 50-50. So they want to gerrymander it to favor their side. They claim we do this, so both sides are fighting about it. I have, I drew a little fire. I was happy to draw a little fire a couple weeks ago when I sent out a tweet saying Republicans need to stand strong. I didn't mean Republicans should violate the law. What I meant is Republicans should get a backbone, and I believe this and believe it strongly, that Republicans should fight for conservative values when we win elections. I sit here and I watch Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats try to slam their agenda through Washington, this far-left extremist agenda, you know, while we as Republicans do not do the same thing when we achieve power. We coddle the Democrats sometimes, and we play these games. And look, there are a lot of great, strong Republicans that fight for our values. But the fact of the matter is, we as Republicans should stand up on redistricting, and we should make sure that these lines get drawn fairly to represent the electorate. One need only look, Brian, at a map of Ohio over the last several presidential cycles, and you'll see there are about five or six blue dots in big urban centers. The rest of this state is ruby red Republican,
yeah,
and that's the way we like it. So we should be drawing districts that represent Ohio, and if those happen to be Republican when they're finished, well, then so be it, because that's the way the voters approved it, and that's the way we vote. So, of course, we're going to draw them fairly. We should, according to the Constitution, But on redistricting right now, it looks, Brian, like we're going to maybe end up just with a four-year map rather than a 10-year map. But, you know, those things are ongoing, and I don't really have any insight beyond what I've seen in the press.
Fair enough. Excellent summary, though, and certainly appreciate the time you spent with my listeners and me today. Alex Trantafilo, head of the Hamilton County Republican Party. We'll keep our fingers crossed you can make it to lunch today, but I certainly will understand if you can't. My dad's going to be there, though, so there's an extra reason to go other than West Side Gym. Alex, until today or down the road when we talk again, the best of health to you, and thanks again for your time.
Thanks, Brian. Take care.
7:55. Coming up at 7:56, we're going to put some love together for the Dragonfly Foundation. You like to ride motorcycles and enjoy music and parties and fun? Well, stick around for after the top of the hour news. Then we get Judge Ana Napolitano at 8:30. Twilight's Last Gleaming, he writes. I'll be right back.
I think we should be able to have a civil conversation.
On 55 KRC.
This conversation has completely made me crazy.
This is complete insanity.
It's the stuff people are talking about.
It's 8:05, fast approaching 8:06 here at 55 KRC Talk Station. Very happy Wednesday to you. Bottom of the hour on Wednesdays, of course, Judge Ana Napolitano. Today he's going to be talking about the president not concerned about your freedom or your personal choice. In the meantime, I am looking forward to Saturday for a lot of reasons. First off, I get to sleep in. But second off, it's the fourth annual Ride for the Dragonfly. And to join me and tell my listeners and give me more details about it, from the Dragonfly Foundation, Mary Tigner. Mary, welcome to the program. It's great having you on today.
Hi, thanks for letting me join you.
Well, I love promoting these events. I am going to be riding in the at the Queen. We're leaving from Queen City Harley-Davidson. We'll get the details in a moment. But first, and more fundamentally, day in and day out, the Dragonfly Foundation is really helping out some quite desperate families. We're talking about families who have children that have been diagnosed with cancer, so pediatric cancer patients. And it's a subject that's near and dear to my heart because I've been helping the Cure Starts Now out for years and years with their annual gala. And that originally started as an effort to cure pediatric brain cancer, and it's expanded to a much broader effort. But I know the Dragonfly Foundation has helped families with children that have been diagnosed with pediatric brain cancer, so thank you for that. But let my listeners know about what exactly it is that you do by way of help.
Yes. In the last 11 years, this year we're celebrating our 11th anniversary. We've helped over 6,000 children, and we support kids who are battling all types of cancer, and we provide support services for them. And that can range from, you know, when they get in the hospital, we give them care bags with over $200 worth of items in them to help them when they're first admitted to the hospital. We also do adopt a family at Christmas time. We help them with urgent needs as they come up. And we just do a wide variety of support services. And, you know, during COVID, that's been very important as families have been even more isolated than they would be during cancer treatments because children are very isolated during treatment. And during COVID, they have been even more than normal. So, you know, things that we provide like iPads to Children's Hospital have allowed them to be even more connected with their families and not feel as alone. And, you know, with us just bringing things like connecting them to their families or bringing in celebrities as we can during normal times or taking them on trips to Kings Island or the Reds games, those things mean a lot and help them make memories that last a lifetime. So those things are very important for those children.
Mary, that's so true. And I think quite often folks lose sight that, you know, we have Cincinnati Children's Hospital. It's a magnet for cancer treatment for children, as well as every other kind of treatment for children. I mean, people come from literally hundreds of miles away from distant states and also quite often isolated regions. You think of the, you know, poor, lower income West Virginia family that they really desperately need a great medical care and they bring their child to Children's Hospital. They've been displaced. They can't just leave. You know, the child's still there getting treatment. And if it's a cancer situation, probably a lot of treatment. You know, those families, they don't know what to expect when they get here, and they quite often aren't prepared when they get here.
Correct. It's funny you say West Virginia. I'm from there. But, yes, so that's why a lot of our support services are so important. And in our care bags are items such as laundry pods, so they can do laundry, they're at the hospital. We give them gift cards so that they can buy things that they need, like Walmart gift cards, Visa gift cards, so they can buy clothes or items that they didn't know if they were going to need, because when they came to Children's Hospital, they may not have known that they were going to get a cancer diagnosis. So they can use those gift cards to buy the things they need to be here for a long time. And, you know, Children's Hospital, as you said, like, there can be people from Alaska that will come here literally to get treatment. There is a family that is connected with us that has come from Alaska to get treatment. So, we make sure they have the things they need. We will buy them clothes if they need them. We will buy them those essentials as they need them. So we work closely with the social workers to make sure that we meet those needs that they have.
All right. And in order to help you serve those folks so well and continue your mission, we can help out by getting on our motorcycles and doing some riding this Saturday. Tell me about the event, because I'm going to be there. I'm ready to go.
Thank you.
Oh, and I checked the weather. I looked at the weather forecast before I talked to you. Partly cloudy, 86 for the high, and only a 16% chance of rain. So it's going to be a great day to ride. So
you take that down to 0% chance of rain right now.
I know we've been rained out in the past, Mary, but it's not going to happen this year. I'm on record. It's not going to happen. So
okay, last year it was not rainy. It was just, you know, we couldn't do the ride
COVID.
The COVID restrictions. But this year the whole thing's on. So it's going to be a fun day. You're going to be there. The Ride for Dragonfly this year is presented by the Basement Doctors. And, you know, it was initially started to honor Super Bubs, who we're all familiar with. He unfortunately passed away in 2017 of cancer. But, you know, the ride has grown from there to honor thousands of pediatric cancer patients and their families as they navigate their cancer treatments, and for those who have passed away and those who are in remission. So it is going to be a great day to help us raise money to continue our mission. Starting at 9:30, people can register. Those who have not registered online already, it will cost $25 on the day of, and then an additional $5 if they want to add passenger to ride with them.
All right, so I'm riding two up, I got to bring an extra Finsky for my wife.
You do.
All right.
Sorry.
I can manage. Listen, Mary, I know where the money's going. I don't. If it was 20 extra bucks, I'd have ponied it up, because it's helping you guys out. So all right.
You know what? I'll put a tip jar out, and you can do that. Okay.
Okay.
We'll take it. And then, the ride officially starts at 11:30. But before that, you get to talk to everybody about what we do. But 11:30 is when the ride officially starts, and then at 2:00. Everybody will come back. So the ride starts at Queen City Harley in Fairfield, and then it will come back there. And there will be a mid-stop point at Houston Woods Lodge. But at 2:00, there'll be some great entertainment at the Danny Fraser Band and Scotty Brasher. And then during the day, it will be family-friendly, and there will be a bounce house for kids, food trucks, and there will be split the pot raffles and a booth with commemorative items that we'll be selling, and there'll be lots of fun raffles throughout the day. So we have some really great items people have donated. I think we have about 30 items that we'll be raffling, so that will be super awesome. So there'll be lots of things for people to do throughout the day. So absolutely, please come out and support us. Again, it starts out with registration at 9:30, and the event concludes at 6:00. So please come out and support us on Saturday.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. The as you mentioned, kickstands are up at 11:30.
Yes, 11:30.
And there will be a couple of stops along the way, from what I understand from reading the materials. We're going to we start from Queen City Harley Davidson's current location, Ralph Warren Fairfield. Beautiful, great place. I know the owner, Brett Takevic. He's an awesome guy.
Yes, and they are. I just got an email from them yesterday, and they said that they are donating like 10% of. Let me see, it was 10% of their sales. So, so it's 10% of sales back to Dragonfly on Saturday. So if you purchase a parts or motor clothes at their Harley Davidson at their location on Saturday, 10% will be donated back to Dragonfly.
Fantastic.
So it's a win-win for everybody.
It is. And although I don't ride a Harley, I have it on good authority. Brett and the group there don't care what you ride as long as you ride. And as a matter of fact, I made Brett ride my bike, and he really liked it. So He's
I can't wait to see it.
He's a dedicated Harley guy, and I understand that. He owns a couple of Harley dealerships. I got a BMW, so I just got it a couple of years ago, and I really like it.
You're fancy.
Yeah, it's a giant cruiser, kind of like a Goldwing kind of thing, but it is very comfortable. So I'll be there on that, maybe with my wife. And again, kickstand's up at 11:30. We're going to be stopping along the way at two stops. Their new location, I didn't even realize they were opening a Westchester location. So we'll swing through there. It opens next year. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to swing through Houston and stop at Houston Woods Lodge for a mid-stop. And then heading back then to Queen City Harley-Davidson for the big party and the band and the food and the drinks. And again,
we want to thank Queen City Harley.
Oh, yeah.
They have helped us so much. Like Kelly Green has helped us organize this so much this year, and we wouldn't be able to do it without Queen City Harley. They have been a great host and helped us so much throughout the year. So thank you to them a lot. So.
Yeah, I strongly encourage you, since I know Brett so well, and I know that particular operation so well. Yeah, if you're looking for a Harley or parts or clothing or anything, certainly on Saturday get one, because 10% of the money is going to go to the Friends of the Dragonfly. But great location. So throughout the year, just keep Queen City Harley-Davidson in mind.
Yes.
Mary, I'm going to see you on Saturday. What time you want me there?
Well, I will be there bright and early setting up. So.
Well, I won't.
Okay, well,
I'll be in bed
at 7:30. So if you want to come help, you can be there at 7:30.
I'll be at least there before 11. How's that?
Okay, well, I appreciate that, Brian.
Well, since you have me doing opening remarks at 11, I damn well better be there by 11, right?
Please, yes. But registration starts at 9:30. So if you haven't, you can still register online. Dragonfly.org/motorcycle. And if you pre-register, there's still like a little bit of a discount. But if you register the day of, again, it's $25 for one bike and then additional $5 if you're going to have a passenger. So please be there on time, Brian.
I will be there on time. Besides, registration closes at 10:45, so you got to at least be there by 10:45.
Yeah,
there you go. All right. Mary, looking forward to it so much. I'm so glad the weather, at least currently, is predicted to be perfect for us riding, and a great charity, great foundation. Thanks for what you do throughout
the
year.
I appreciate it, and I'm so happy to help all the children and their families. It's the least I could do.
I know you are. Listen, every person I've met involved with Dragonfly is just they embrace. And I don't want to call it work, but they embrace what they do. It's fulfilling for everyone there, and I know that you get the same
really
level
is.
Of fulfillment every day. So,
really
not many people can say that about a job, Mary.
I'm happy to help.
See you on Saturday.
Okay, see you then.
Thank you. 8:17:55.
If I could put on a statewide mandate, we would do it. What the legislature has made very clear is that if we put on a statewide mandate, they will take it off. They have the ability to do that.
Well, we know how life would be under the DeWine dictatorship. And we thankfully have a legislative branch that is preventing him from being a dictator. So there you have it. Oh, and look what he's taking it on the chin this morning. Thank you, Joe Strecker, for forwarding this post. I looked up on my Facebook, and I'm like, what the heck is that? It's a proclamation. Like, Governor, he's forwarding me something from Governor DeWine. 21 minutes ago on Governor Mike DeWine's Facebook page, it says, today we are proud to recognize September 15th as Small Business Day. Small businesses account for nearly half of the U.S. economy and almost half of the gross domestic product. Accurate statement. Proclamation has a bunch of whereases. You know, they account for nearly half the U.S. economy. Influence small business in the economy is evident in every community, et cetera. Ohio's 965,576 small businesses make up 99.6 of all businesses in Ohio. 2.2 million small business employees in Ohio, et cetera, et cetera. Now, therefore, we, Mike DeWine and John Husted, Governor, Lieutenant Governor of the State of Ohio, do hereby recognize Small Business Day at the Capitol. September 15th, the year 2021. Now, how is this? What is the response to this? You're like, all right, fine. It's a proclamation. No big deal. Doesn't really necessarily mean anything. And of course, at least he's acknowledging small businesses. Here's a sampling. Interesting, because your policies directly favored their competition, who have thrived under your rule while we small businesses have suffered. One very prominent listener to the program and local politician. I shut down one of my businesses here this year. The second may not be far behind. You have no idea what small businesses are going through. Our small business got a lot smaller. One wrote down 90% in 2020 and 80% in 2021. Any smaller, and we're out of business. Thanks, Mikey. Adam comments, so the tyrant that shut down small businesses while currying favor to the big retailers throughout Ohio now wants to honor those that remain. How rich. Oh, you want to really help small businesses in Ohio? The pushback on shots, masks, vaccine proof, and join DeSantis on his pushback agendas. There's still time to win my respect. Please act. What small businesses are left that you didn't ruin with your mandates? Go somewhere. You're not getting reelected. I can't find a single positive statement that in reaction to this. They're flying in. First time I looked, there were only six comments. Again, he just posted this like 25 minutes ago. Wow. Well, that's to be expected. And on a Wednesday, at the bottom of the hour, 8:30, that's to be expected. Judge Anna Napolitano returns, and he will. I hope you can stick around for that one. First word for my favorite plumbers, Plum Type. They actually put some effort into that one. Happy Wednesday. Of course, he's talking about the one and only, the Right Honorable Judge Andrew Napolitano, who's on the 55 KRC Morning Show. Thank God. Every Wednesday at 8:30 to give us a healthy dose of legal, libertarian, constitution, freedom-loving common sense. Welcome back, Your
thank
Honor.
Thank you, Brian. Good morning. Good morning. To be compared in any way to Aaron Judge, one of the great athletes of all time, is truly humbling. And for this Yankee fan, fabulous.
Yeah, I know you are a huge Yankee fan, so that is great. And oh, I know that we aren't going to be speaking at least at length. I'm just going to bring it up, though. I saw what New Yorkers would be paying by way of income tax if Biden's proposal goes through. I can only imagine it's going to be that bad, or at least that bad or worse for folks that live in New Jersey like yourself.
And all the Democrats in the House of Representatives and the Senate from New York and New Jersey will vote in favor of this.
Yeah. That means they'll be soaking what up, like with state income and all that, it's 65% or so of every dollar that you earn. That is unconscionable.
That's called confiscation.
I call it slavery, Your Honor.
Yes.
I mean, you literally are working 2/3 of your life for the government.
Against your will.
Against your will. Yeah, against exactly the kind of thing we're talking about this morning. And your quote, it's the column comes out tonight. Look for it. Twilight's Last Gleaming by Judge Anna Napolitano. It'll come out at midnight. And you lead with a quote from President Joseph R. Biden, September 9th, 2021. Quote, this is not about freedom or personal choice. Close quote. What a constitutionally insulting statement. I don't care what context this is in. We are entitled to personal freedom, and we are entitled to personal choice here. Hey, Roe v. Wade, right? You mentioned that one.
It's hard to believe. Roe v. Wade, of all Supreme Court opinions, it's dead wrong on whether the fetus is a person, but it's absolutely correct on who controls your body, you or the government. The answer is you do. So Joe should read the cases that he's praising. Of course, he praises Roe v. Wade because of abortion. And you and I and most people listening to us now condemn it for that reason. But there are other parts of Roe v. Wade which are purely libertarian in their manifestation. And it is this. You own your body. You control your body. You decide what goes into your body, not the government. Every state in the union allows a sick person to decline medical attention and medications. And Joe Biden wants healthy people to be forced to take an experimental vaccine?
Yeah.
What constitution is he reading?
No idea. The Constitution, apparently, which allows for, and although I knew you take issue this, the creation in 1970 of OSHA, which, pursuant to OSHA and their dictatorial abilities, is now, under Biden's edict, going to mandate employers with more than 100 employees, 100 or more, compelling and mandating they receive a vaccine, or the employer is going to get a fine.
OSHA is not very good at defending its emergency decrees in court, particularly when they're politically motivated. So I'm optimistic that this thing is going to collapse. And quite frankly, Biden may know that. He may have just made that grand show the other day just for show.
Well, it does take
language like the government can take your personal liberty and your free choices, or words to that effect. Is reprehensible coming from a person who's taken an oath to uphold the Constitution. The Constitution guarantees our fundamental liberties against the government. If the government wants our fundamental liberties for any reason, it has to try us before a jury and prove fault. It can't do it by dictate. He knows that. If the right to live and the right to own your own body and control what goes into it are not protected by the Constitution, then nothing is.
Indeed. Well, there's a couple of things at play here. First off, I suggest perhaps he did overstate his authority. He did clearly overstate the authority OSHA has. This is not an emergent situation that OSHA would even have any control over. It's medically related, and it's not going away anytime. So the idea that this has to be immediately addressed in the workplace pursuant to this kind of draconian rule is crazy. But does this not remind you, because you know, and the predicate for your column and the conclusions in your column is this is not constitutional. You and I both know that.
Right.
And it'll be at some point that it'll slap an injunction on to the extent they move forward. Fine. But is this not along the same lines as Eric Holder and Operation Chokehold, where they have government regulations and they threaten you, you must capitulate, even though you, bank, for example, are doing lawful business by allowing a gun manufacturer or a payday lender to use your bank resources, if you continue to do that lawful conduct, we're going to do a compliance audit. How would you like that?
Yes, Brian, you read my mind. And it's even worse than that. It's very, very Joe Stalin-like.
Yeah.
Let's force people that don't work for us to enforce our laws. He is forcing employers to enforce laws and regulations that have nothing whatsoever to do with their workplace. And if they don't enforce those mandates the way the government wants them enforced, without a trial, without due process, they get fined $14,000 per employee per day.
Okay.
That is draconian.
There is no
place under the Constitution or anywhere in American society to allow the government to punish someone without proving fault. And there is no opportunity for the government to force private people to work for it against their will. The 13th Amendment, this is how we started our conversation, prohibits slavery.
Yes, it does. Now, that doesn't mean it's not going to happen. And that doesn't mean a bunch of people aren't already capitulating on this.
I'm sure they are capitulating because they are terrified. Because a small business person who has 150 employees, a small construction company, a series of retail stores, they just want to get on with their business and on with their lives. They don't want federal inspectors all over the place deciding how much they should be fined. So it's easier and cheaper to capitulate. Somebody's going to challenge this.
Oh, yeah.
Just like there were two challenges last night to New York City and New York State mandates, and both challenges were upheld. The mandates were enjoined by federal judges, one by a federal judge, one by a state judge, yesterday afternoon.
Well, and as I always try to explain to my listeners, if you're not lawyers, you don't get the elements of injunction, but to have a temporary restraining order or an injunction issued, there has to be the likelihood of irreparable harm. That means if you could get paid cash and be made whole, then you're not going to be irreparably harmed. But
if you are forced to get a vaccine, to violate your religious rights against your will, that is harm that cannot be compensated for by the payment of money. And that's what these two judges said.
Indeed. And especially if you went through and were forced to get the actual vaccine, you can't unring that bell either.
Correct.
Now, some of the employers, and this is where, you know, being a civil litigation attorney for so many years, I have a decent understanding of tort law. I hear a lot of employers wanting these rules in place because it somehow will relieve them of any liability for COVID spread. And my response is, well, that's ridiculous. How in God's green earth is any human being going to be able to prove they picked up COVID at your workplace as opposed to any other place they are when they go out away from work?
And not only that, but when the government forces you to make sure that your employees are vaccinated, doesn't give you anything. It doesn't give you immunity from liability. So they're wrong to assume that. But you're right. This is a nearly impossible case to prove. And those cases haven't started yet.
No.
The only cases we know about are the ones where judges have preliminarily, as you say, without a trial, just on the basis of evidence produced in documents, decided the state is more likely than not to lose. The harm is irreparable. I'm going to prevent the enforcement of this right now before a trial. But other cases where people say, I got sick, my grandfather got sick and died because we patronized this establishment, those cases haven't come down the track yet.
Do you anticipate that we will come out on the rosier side of constitutional protections?
I was surprised at the two decisions that came down yesterday afternoon. And I think it once all this reaches the Supreme Court...
Yeah, that's where I'm going, yeah.
5-4, 6-3 in favor of human freedom.
That is what I'm hoping for in the final analysis. Your Honor, I always try to look for some positive light in this whole COVID thing.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
One of them is certainly that parents apparently have now started paying attention to the crap their children are being fed in schools and rebelling over it. So that was good. And
right.
This is another one. It may come down with a couple of Supreme Court cases on this that we do have a heightened strength of personal liberty and freedom, which is already guaranteed by the Constitution.
There you go.
Your Honor. Always a pleasure.
Brian, this has been a whirlwind. Always a pleasure, my man.
Love it, man. Talk to you next Wednesday. And everybody look for his column coming out tonight, Twilight's Last Gleaming. Until next
Thank you,
Wednesday.
Brian. All the best.
Stay well. 839, 840.